Welcome to the Modern Vinyl Podcast Random Pool Edition. I'm Alan Miller. This is our continuation of the Dylan in the 80s theme, where myself and Matt Pfeffercorn go through every Bob Dylan album in the 80s and discuss what we like and don't like. Today we're actually covering two of the albums together because they kind of fit together pretty much. We're doing Knocked Out Loaded, which was in 1986, and Dylan and the Dead, which didn't come out till I think a little bit later on in the 80s, but is pretty much right there with Knocked Out Loaded. So enjoy. This is Alan.
This is Matt.
And this is Dylan in the 80s. We have made it all the way through Empire Burlesque, thank God. And now we're at Knocked Out Loaded.
Yes.
Which has a terrible album cover. Empire Burlesque is terrible, but Knocked Out Loaded is, I mean, it looks like it was some piece that was blown up at a photocopier somewhere and pasted on.
Some kind of movie theme going on here.
Let's talk about his 80s album covers for a second. The only one that I kind of don't think is bad at all is Down in the Groove. That was not a bad album cover.
That's a great album cover because...
Because he's kind of on the stage doing his thing.
Like it's classic.
Yeah.
It's Dylan in his natural state. Not made up, not makeup, right. Not bad. Sport coat.
But every other album cover is pretty terrible. Even Shot of Love, which is, I mean, not Shot of Love, but Oh Mercy, which is a good album, has a bad album cover.
Yeah, it's not a great one. Not at all.
So,
going off that, this cover probably has the scene on the cover is part of the story for Brownsville Girl.
So this album is basically Brownsville Girl. Because that's like a 12-minute track.
Right. And I guess would probably be the standout track on the album. I particularly like You Wanna Ramble.
Yeah, it's not bad.
I love it that that's the first song.
Yeah.
And like you drop the needle and it's like, hell yes.
You're in the blues. You're back into the blues.
Dylan is back. And then they go to They Killed Him. Why in the world?
Well, give me 2 seconds before we dive into that. I did make notes on You Wanna Ramble. I put blues, good, back to normal. That was my notes.
Yeah.
Exact same thing you just said.
Yeah.
It goes back to normal.
Well, and look, you got, okay, it's with Dylan, you have T-Bone Burnett and Al Kooper.
Solid.
That's, you know, and then, of course, the backing vocals. Which
what are you going to do?
It was all part of the shtick then for his stage show. But that track, yes, he's back.
I had high hopes for the album after hearing that track.
Yeah.
Then we get to They Killed Him. So let me lay out my experience with it and then I'll listen to your different experience. So does that say Kris Kristofferson?
Yeah, it's a Kristofferson song.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, his version is much better.
So it starts with him talking about Gandhi and I'm like, okay, well he's going to write a song about Gandhi. Okay, fair enough. Like this is a peaceful person who got killed and et cetera, et cetera. But then the second verse starts and he's like Martin Luther King. And I was like, oh shit, here we go. And by the third verse, I was already ready for Jesus. I knew it was coming. And then he says, Jesus Christ, they killed him. They kill all these people for their religious beliefs. Really? Are you fucking kidding me? They did not kill all of these people just for their religious beliefs. Let's get that out of the way first. I feel like now that it's a Kristofferson song, that kind of shocks me because I thought this was Dylan trying to wrap up his Jesus phase. I thought he was trying to write a song to get back to Jesus in like a roundabout way without having to just go, you got to serve somebody, you know, like without putting it right out there.
Right. Well, first off, if the listeners out there have made it this far into all these Dylan podcasts, if you remember at the beginning, Alan is not a fan of the religious albums of Dylan.
I'm not a fan at all.
At all. And very odd choice for Bob to pull this song and do it. And it's interesting because until now you thought he wrote it.
I should interject quickly though. I'm not against religious music. There's a lot of religious songs and albums that I like.
Right.
But they're well written.
Right. That's the Dylan.
Yes.
Yeah. There is nothing, I don't know, it's tough. There's not much redeemable about this song. I do like Kristofferson's version. It's passable. I would like to hear his.
I didn't know that it was a Kristofferson
later
song.
Later in his career, but, you know, and to bring the children's choir in it.
Oh, God. I forgot about that until you just brought it up.
I shouldn't have brought it up. Damn it.
Oh, my God. The kids start singing. What are you doing? Why are the kids singing? And they don't even sound good. It's not, hey, teachers, leave those kids alone. It's some kind of weird-ass,
it's like
synthesized child's choir.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Oh, my God.
And honestly,
it's worth a listen. Everyone needs to hear that song at least once
they
in
do.
Their life.
Yeah. You know, the album itself does not regain anything until Brownsville Girl on side two.
It's so true.
I mean, they killed side one.
Yeah.
You got Drifting Too Far From the Shore, which, you know, it's Ron Wood and Anton Figg, which, great musicians, but...
But Ron Wood's very hit and miss. Hit or miss, I should say. Either hits just all on it or it's completely off. There's not a lot of middle ground of Ron Wood.
Precious Memories. Oh, here again, here's what
I thought he was like circling back to the religious bit with this album. I really did, because you had They Killed Him, you had Precious Memories, which is an old like hymnal.
Yeah.
That he's just doing himself. Brownsville Girl is not religious whatsoever. It's not really good either, in my opinion, but it goes on 5 minutes longer than it should.
Yeah.
I think if
that's the Sam Shepard in it, too.
I'm not familiar.
He's a playwright, but he also went on the Rolling Thunder tour in 75 and 76 and wrote On the Road with the Rolling Thunder. It was kind of like a tour logbook.
Okay.
Which is a great book, by the way.
So, did he play Brownsville Girl live?
I think he did. Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. This album, at this point in his career, this is the bottom, essentially, of Dylan in his career right now going, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. I don't even know how to be relevant in the musical world. He probably couldn't even write enough tunes to make an album, which is why he got the Kristofferson, the Precious Memories, and a co-write with Tom Petty and a co-write with Sam Shepard, because he went out on tour with Petty and the Heartbreakers for this album.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dylan would start out playing.
So he toured with Petty for this album.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers backed Dylan.
Okay.
And so, you know, it was a cool show, actually, because, you know, Dylan and the Heartbreakers would come out.
What year are we talking about? What Petty album are we talking about during that time? Is that later than Damn the Torpedoes?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was probably right before
Southern Accents,
I think. But, you know, they would do five or six Dylan tunes. Dylan would trail off the stage. Tom Petty would do four songs.
Yeah.
Then Dylan had come back. So it was cool.
Which what's kind of funny about that is that Petty and his band were probably sounding more like Dylan than Dylan was at that time.
Probably so. I mean,
Southern Accents would be more of a Dylan album than Dylan was doing.
You know, I mean, if he was ever going to have a band put together to back him, the Heartbreakers are the perfect band.
I agree and disagree. I think they were a little too rocking for Dylan. They were a little too, like, you know, Petty through the 80s, I would almost say, he had an edge to him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was traditional rock in a sense, but there was this, like, that new wave kind of 80s new edge wave, to him.
Even punkish.
Even a little punk. Right. Or, like, garage. Yeah. Garage is a better way to put it.
But look at the 88 touring band for Dylan. That was a rocking band with G.E. Smith, Kenny Aronoff on bass, and Christopher Parker on drums. I mean, you had a four-piece rock and roll band, but at this time, Dylan was probably just going through the motions, not where did he go? And that on that tour is when he had the epiphany, supposedly on stage overseas on the last leg of the tour, that he found out what to do, where to go.
Really?
Yeah. After touring with he toured with the Dead as well. And that's a whole nother.
Well,
thing.
We haven't got to that just yet.
But, you know, he did two tours with the Dead, actually.
Is Dylan the Dead after this album?
It is.
Okay, we'll just mix them. Yeah. We'll put them together.
Yeah.
Dylan and the Dead won't take very long.
It won't. The best thing it did, honestly, for Dylan was to look at what the Dead were doing as far as reworking their songs, pulling out different tunes, and that's what Dylan needed to do, is kind of revamp his career.
You know, I tell you another problem with this is if you look at the bottom recorded at Skyline Studios, The Church, Delta Studios, Cherokee Studios, Sound City, can't do that. You can't record an album over studios.
Put together album, basically.
Yeah.
It's basically like, hey, remember, we need an album a year.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
But outside of You Wanna Ramble, Brownsville Girl, is there anything else that really sticks out in your head that... But let's be honest, you're not going to go listen to Brownsville Girl at any given time.
No, but what's funny, it winds up on several compilations just for the fact that you got to pull something from that time period.
So strange.
Yeah.
Because it's such a long song.
And unfortunately, it's somewhat of another Dylan forgettable album. You know, you see where I picked up my copy.
Yeah, it's got the punch.
The cutout bins.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is where it probably went after 6 months.
I mean, I think you sold the one you had in the shop, but you had it in there for a long time.
Yeah.
It took a long time for somebody to go, oh, yeah.
And hopefully it wasn't somebody that was like, oh, yeah, I love Bob Dylan.
Yeah, I hope to God. I hope it was a completist.
I need a Dylan album.
You almost want to, like, vet the person before they buy it. Like, hey, what's the last Bob Dylan album you listened to?
Are you into Dylan?
You like Highway 61?
Yeah.
Give me that. Right. You can't have that.
Pulling a Jack Black. In a good way.
No, for the right reasons. You'd be doing a Jack Black for the right reasons. All right, so that... Oh, Jesus, now we got to get into this mess. 89,
but the tour was in 87.
Okay. Give me the history of this. You know all about this. I guess we should mention that you do a weekly radio show called Dead Air.
I do. Yes.
That is all about the Grateful Dead and surrounding acts that have come and go with the Dead.
Right. Yeah.
Jam bands a little bit, stuff like
that. Yeah. Basically, anybody who's been influenced by the Dead or vice versa.
So when it comes to the Dead, you pretty much know your stuff. You know what you're talking about. You've been involved with it so long. How long have you been doing the radio show?
13 years.
So 13 years of every Sunday doing the radio show.
13
except
years.
Except for a few NASCAR Sundays. But, yeah.
Let's not get, yeah.
That's something. But so Dylan and Dead, give me the lowdown on how this album happened.
Well, okay. So they did a show. They did a tour in July of 87. And it was basically both camps got together. Dylan came out to Front Studios, which is a Grateful Dead rehearsal space, office space, gathering space. And they jammed for a little bit. And basically, in Bill Kreutzmann's words, because I'm reading his book right now, Dylan and his dog, who stunk to high heaven, showed up and wanted to jam. So they jammed. It was great.
Now, is that a... Is it a Was that a metaphor for something? His dog, or was he mean his
no,
like,
literal, his dog.
His literal his dog. Dog. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Yeah. I'm sure there were other things that were stinking, but so they jammed, and then a couple of months later, both camps got together, and Dylan's like, had a great time, you know, and so I guess managers talked, whatnot. They put a tour together, which is basically the Grateful Dead and Bob Dylan, with the Dead being Dylan's backing band for the tour. So the Dead would play a set, to come out, Dylan and the Dead would play a set, and then they'd do an encore.
So in the 60s and 70s, had the Dead been covering some Dylan tunes already?
Yes. Yeah, Jerry, huge Dylan fan. They all pretty much were, for the most part. But Jerry and Bob, mutual respect, admiration for their, you know, music.
So they decided to do a tour together?
A tour meaning about five or six shows.
So it's like a mini tour together.
Mini tour, and it was within the Dead's summer jaunt. So basically, you know, the Dead would play Pittsburgh, and then they'd play Philadelphia, which was, it was all centered around large stadium venues.
Okay.
Anaheim, Philadelphia, RFK, Meadowlands, you know, places like that.
So the Dylan and the Dead album, is it culled from all of those shows?
Yes.
Okay.
But really, the Dead didn't have any say-so in it. They didn't care, you know, if an album was put out or not. That wasn't the main reason for doing the tour.
Yeah.
And basically how they got ready for the tour, Dylan came out in May of 87, I believe, to the Dead's rehearsal space. They played for about a week. I think you can go online and listen to a lot of the rehearsals. They basically covered hundreds of Dylan songs and older tunes that Dylan liked or whatnot, or Jerry, you know, Whiskey in the Jar, Not Fade Away, stuff like that. But they didn't have a basic plan per se of like, hey, here's what we're going to play. You know, Dylan in fine fashion would see the Dead's improv. And so one of the, Dylan would pull out a song they hadn't rehearsed.
Right. I mean, we see where we right. see, we see yeah. the problem that's, yes. yeah. that's happening here.
So the best thing for Dylan out of all this was to probably gain a little bit of knowledge for picking songs or stage presence from the Dead, of like how they improved or,
right.
you know, picked obscure tunes.
Well, as a 14 or 15 year old, talking about me, just learning about both of these, you know, both of these people.
Right.
I remember seeing the CD in the shop with this cover art. I was like, whoa, it's a train with, you know, it's got a huge train coming through the middle with very Grateful Dead like graphics on
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah.
With Bob with the lightning bolt going through right. his glasses.
It's awesome. And it's a great cover.
And the roses, the skeleton with the roses
right.
kind of thing. And I was like, man, this has got to be good. Dylan and the Dead, that has to be amazing. Because, yeah. like, how could it not be, you know? And it cannot be. It cannot be amazing.
The story goes, Bob Dylan came over to Mickey Hart's house and had a small jam box with a cassette of the mixes for the album
right.
and wanted him to hear it and said, what do you think? And that was basically how he heard it.
Did you buy this when it came out?
You'll notice in the corner there
yeah.
by the punch mark that I bought it in the cutout bins.
But I didn't know if it just went straight to a cutout bin or if it actually
Okay. I remember when it came out and the record store at the time I was working at, we played it a lot, you know, just because it was a new release by two right. major artists that were touring at the time. You know, so it was a big deal when it was released. The end result, it wasn't a great time period for Dylan. Honestly, Jerry was not in great health
yeah,
either.
That's true.
So,
were you already a fan of the Dead when this came out?
Actually, I was just becoming a fan. I was more of a Dylan. I was a Dylan fan before I was a Dead fan.
Okay.
And I was heavy into Dylan at the time. And just right after that is when I got into the Dead and pretty much went on tour.
So I haven't made it to side B of this. Like I was telling you earlier, I stopped at Queen Jane.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything from listening to it as a teenager because I think I only listened to it once and then like tossed it and never listened to it again.
It takes some work getting through it.
I probably tossed this and then either put in something off Biograph or like or American Beauty or something and be like, right. this is good, but this isn't.
Really, the best way to listen to that is to go and listen to the shows online. Because, you know, some of the cool stuff, Jerry played pedal steel on, what tune was it? I can't remember offhand, but Jerry played pedal steel for the first time since like the early 70s, late 60s.
Right.
Which would have been something perfect to put on the album. He played pedal steel
with New Riders of the Purple Sage.
Yeah.
So I guess what I wanted to ask you about this is this compilation's not the best. But are any of the single live shows pretty good of Dylan and the Dead?
There are, yeah.
Because I'm sure you've listened to the single shows.
Yes, yeah. It seems like the Anaheim show is really good. And I think they played in Oregon also. And that one.
And this is 87?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, I like the version of Slow Train on here. I like that.
I didn't mind You Gotta Serve Somebody on there. I didn't mind that. Yeah. I think that the Dead kind of, they fell into that one pretty good because it's that bluesy driving, slower.
Yes. Yeah.
Slow Train was a little quick, wasn't it? Like, then they played a little fast on there.
A little bit, yeah.
And then when, I need to mention, when we get to I Want You, it's like it's a no pun intended with the album art, a fucking train wreck.
Yeah. It's because, a shouting match.
Yeah, it's that. It is. And it's also, you know, Bob will just stop singing. And they'll have a break where they want to do a solo. And as soon as Jerry starts doing his solo, Bob will jump right back in.
Right.
Or, like, they'll get to chord changes. There's not that many chord changes in I Want You.
No.
But they'll get to a bridge part. And I always thought, and you might correct me if I'm wrong, but Phil Lesh never really got the chord changes the best. I always feel like the bass kind of, like, lingers sometimes on previous chords. Like, he doesn't jump with the rest of the band sometimes.
Yeah.
It kind of takes him a minute to, between that and like Mickey doing weird drum fills from time to time.
Right.
Like, it takes him a minute kind of to catch up with the rest of the song. And that happens a lot. And I Want You, especially with the drums, because there's two drummers going.
Yes.
There's Mickey. And then who else is playing drums?
Kreutzmann. Bill Kreutzmann.
So they're both trying to play drums together and they're both trying to catch up with Jerry and Bob.
Right.
Jerry's doing a solo while Bob wants to come in and sing, and then Phil's left in the back somewhere trying to pick up wherever they are. It's a complete train wreck.
Well, and that's the sad thing about something that could have been so great. It's obviously the lack of rehearsing or having any type of structure, which the Dead is not used to structure anyways. Correct. Dylan probably is, but Dylan's wanting to not have structure because he's seeing what the Dead's doing. And the Dead are going, man, we don't know these songs, so we need a little structure. So it's like,
see, this, I kind of took it
push-pull thing.
I took it similar to what you're saying, but a little different. I kind of took it as Dylan trying to mold himself into what the Dead do, which is the Dead jam on stuff for a while.
Right.
But when you take a song like I Want You that has very specific changes in it.
Yes.
You know, the bridge is very specific. The verse is very specific. The chorus is very specific. You can't free flow that into like just a jam.
Well, it's
because there's strange chord changes in that song.
You can't jam on that song.
No, you can't at
all. So if they played that at the first show, that's one that you just drop.
But You Gotta Serve Somebody, you can jam on because it's a basic blues number. Right. And they do a good job jamming on that.
For and the Jerry's most part. Got great background vocals too on it too. Joey.
I didn't make it that
It's far. Passable. All Along the Watchtower, there's your easy jam. And, of course, they end with Knocking on Heaven's Door, which was a staple for the Grateful Dead and for Jerry Garcia, too. So, you know, it's honestly, it was probably a contract obligation because there's not a whole lot of songs on here either.
Like, what, 8 songs?
Yeah.
So it's worth giving a listen.
Sure.
And if you like it, give it another listen.
For the history of it.
But for the most part, you're probably going to give it a listen and be done with it.
Search out the actual shows. That's what I say.
Yeah. Just in general with the Dead. Like, just search out actual shows to listen to.
Well, the actual Dylan and the Dead shows versus listening to the album.
But even like, even for instance, with the Grateful Dead, like the compilation albums are never really quite as good as like a full show. Wouldn't you say that?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like you want a full, like that's kind of where I think this suffers a little bit is being a comp
right.
from multiple shows. Like maybe if they would have just stuck with one whole show.
Yeah.
Maybe that would have been a lot better.
At that time period, though, for the music industry,
it's all about comps. Yeah. Yep.
But if you want a good, you know, I guess, in this time period for the Dead, Without a Net would be a good look to for like, hey, what's the Dead sound like live at this time period? Without a Net's a pretty good snapshot.
Right on.
I don't know.
So the question that we always ask, which song would you
gotta serve somebody?
That's what I would say.
Yep.
I mean, it's a blues jam. It's easy.
Yeah. It's good.